हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 92. Okay. Pray for something else for gaining protection. Perform sat karmas, etc. To reject such a proposal, this verse states that the Lord gives protection not just from enemies, but even from samsara. Everyone should surrender to the Lord. I do not see any other methods like satkarmas. By performing renunciation or other methods, generally mankind becomes fearful. Or, for all jivas who are fearful of death, there is no other way except surrender to your lotus feet. Death indicates all of samsara, including birth. But because death is the most painful, it is mentioned in place of samsara. Or men fear punishment at death, what to speak of repeated death, samsarata. Not seeing anyone with the proper power, she gives the reason for her choice. You are the Lord, Ishvarasya. Therefore, his feet are beyond the material world. Or those feet give freedom from difficulties like killing a Brahman, even for Shiva, Ishvarasya. Right, so that someone might think that, no, but there's other methods you could use to protect yourself. Then she's pointing out, there's no, only Krishna, he's the only protection. He's the only, nothing else can actually be a source of protection. He's the controller. Only he can stop the cycle of birth and death, right? Others can't. You know, so he's saying, even for Lord Shiva, right? So then even he has that. So by taking shelter of the Lord, then all that benefit is there. Queen Kunti continued, I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Supersoul, the Lord of pure devotional service, and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus meditating on her family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe, your great-grandmother Kunti Devi began to cry out in grief, O King. Both Akura, who shared Queen Kunti's distress and happiness, and the illustrious Vidura consoled the queen by reminding her of the extraordinary way her sons had taken birth. Right? So there they're trying to give some solace and all that, you know, because they're special. They're even though they're being harassed, but they took birth from the demigods, so they're not ordinary. So actually, and the benedictions they have, all that, they can't be destroyed. And that they're devotees and all that doesn't mean there's not going to be trouble, but still, you know, they're devotees, why they should get that trouble. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. When Kunti was offering her prayers very feeling to Krishna, she could not check herself and began to cry loudly before Akrura. Vidura was also present, and both Akrura and Vidura became very sympathetic to the mother of the Pandavas and began to solace her by glorifying her five sons. Namely, Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadeva. They pacified her, saying that her sons were extraordinarily powerful. She should not be perturbed about them, since they were born of great demigods like Yamaraj, Indra, and Vayu. Right? So the demigods themselves will be taken care of, but the point, they're devotees of Krishna, and so Krishna will take care. Does that make sense? So the whole point is no one else can actually take care. That's the principle is there. There is no other method. People then look to that so many other ways they'll protect themselves. But factually only Krishna can protect. It means you perform your duties to do what you should do. in the situation, but that will be successful, it's still up to Krishna. There is no material process. Does that make sense? There isn't anything, because the cycle of samsara is going on what you've done in the past, what you're doing now, then projects what will, what you've done in the past gives you what you have now. What you do with what you have now is what you're going to happen in the future. So the point is the religious processes are just what's used. But what's coming from the past, you don't know. Right? You can do the proper things now, but what will actually be coming from the past, you can't say. Right? Because some things will affect you for, you know, one time, some things for many times, some things for many births. Does that make sense? So the only thing you can deal with that is Krishna consciousness. So only Krishna can actually protect you from all that. Right? Because when he mentions, you know, killing a Brahmin, that there is no atonement for that. So when we say is that going around Tulsi will destroy even the sin of killing a Brahmin, there is no atonement. And that's if you did it accidentally. If you did it on purpose, you know, just you can just forget about it, you know. Lock you up, they throw away the key. Like that. You understand? So that devotional service can destroy even the sin of killing a Brahmin. There is no religious process that can do that. So that's the power of devotional service. It's special. So there is no other method. If we think something else will do it, you can't buy off Yamaraj. You can't buy off the Yamadutas. It's way more fun tossing you off this mountain down onto the, what looks like an ocean, but it's just rocks so that it, you know, you breaks you up in little dinky pieces. Then they come down, pick you up and drag you up, toss. It's so much more fun doing that. What can you offer them? You know what I'm saying? They don't need anything down there. So they're having great fun. So you can't pay anybody off. So your money won't help. Your position won't help. Nothing will help. Because when you're dead, everybody dies. Doesn't matter how big you are. Does that make sense? So only Krishna, actually surrendered to Krishna, can protect you from everything. Because the main thing is protecting from samsara. So if we get out of the cycle of samsara, that's the real savior. Right? Does that make sense? Just like if you're in, let's say you're in prison, and then there's so many difficulties in prison. Right? So you can say, okay, if we do this, we'll block that problem, and you do this, we'll block that problem, and so many things. But the real problem is to get out of the prison. You know what I'm saying? It's not to get a better mattress or to get some curtains so people can't look in when you're sitting in your prison cell. Does that make sense? You know, they have a nice cushion on the wooden seat, you know, when you take your meal like that, you know, that you get a little, you know, extra virgin olive oil to put on your, you know, prison food or something like that. We can come up with those that, yes, this will make it good. And if I have a little, I know this guy, I do my networking and I can, but the real solution is getting out of prison. Does that make sense? So that's why then only Krishna consciousness is the real solution. Everything else is a temporary solution. Verses 16-31. Akura delivers Krishna's message to Dhritarashtra. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. The ardent affection King Dhritarashtra felt for his sons made him act... Yes. Made him act unjustly toward the Pandavas. Just before leaving, Akura approached the king, who was seated among his friends and supporters. related to him the message that his relatives, Lord Krishna and Balaram, had sent out of friendship. Akura said, "O my dear son of Vichitravirya, O enhancer of the Kuru's glory, your brother Pandu having passed away, you have now assumed the royal throne." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Vichitravirya means the son of Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya was the name of Dhritarashtra's father, But Dhritarashtra was actually the begotten son, not of Vichitravirya, but of Vyasadeva. Formerly, it was the system that if a man were unable to beget a child, his brother could beget a child in the womb of his wife. That system is now forbidden in this age of Kali. Akura called Dhritarashtra Vichitravirya sarcastically because he was not actually begotten by his father. He was the son of Vyasadeva. When a child was begotten in the wife by the husband's brother, the child was claimed by the husband. But of course, the child was not begotten by the husband. This sarcastic remark pointed out that Dhritarashtra was falsely claiming the throne on hereditary grounds. Right? So he's pointing out that aspect. Right? Because who the woman is married to, that's who the children belong to. It doesn't matter who begot them, just like the Pandavas, they're Pandu's son, even though they're begotten by the demigods. Right? Because Pandu's married to Kunti, and the sons are produced in the womb of Kunti, so therefore they're Pandu's sons. That's the system. But in this age, it's not a system that's used because it will not go well. Right? And people will claim that, no, this is mine. Because the other thing we can say is, you know, on the one side is how people behave, but point is people are so attached that they get a son. He'll want the son. It's my son, but it's not. You understand? You know, it's just like if I come and plant something in your field, when it grows, I want the fruits from that tree. I planted it, but it's not your field. Right? It's the other guy's field. He gets it. Yes?
So what happens to adopted children? Can the biological parents claim them later, according to this system?
They're the biological parents, but who's raising them? Who's taking care of them? So it depends upon the situation. Is that either the adopted child then will claim the property of the foster father, you know, if that things are going nicely there, or he may also then connect himself back to his biological father. So both are there. I think it depends upon what's the quality of the child. If he grows up to properly follow the foster father, then his inheritance will go there. And if not, then he can go back to his own father. So I think it's very, very individual. It depends on the situation. It depends upon how it's going. But in the Vedic system, it's one of the 12 ways of having a son. So they would be the foster father's son. But then, you know, whether there's going to be any claim on the other. Because generally in this way, it's either adopted means the parents are dead or the parents have rejected or you somehow or another, you know, been separated, you don't know, and, you know, stuff like that. You turned right, they went left, you know, like that. And in other words, when they went into Sinai, they turned left, then you know who they are. If you went straight, then there's a problem. Right? You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. He spoke with conciliation and sarcasm, right? So it was a mix. So conciliation means, you know, you're trying to placate the person and make them, you know, comfortable and understand and all that. So he's doing that, but he was also using the sarcastic element. He repeats the word bho bho to make the king attentively face him, since it was possible the king would resist. Since Akura's words would not be sweet. By mentioning Vichitravirya's name, he employs pacification, by suggesting he was the son of a great king. Since Pandu had died, there was no king to protect the citizens. For a long time since he died, you have been sitting on the throne. This is improper. He calls him the great fame of the Kurus out of sarcasm. The meaning is, because of you, the dynasties become infamous. Right? So, what did he say? The enhancer of Kuru's glory, your father, you have now assumed the royal form. The enhancer of the Kuru's glory. But it's not necessarily, in this case, a positive glory. It means people are talking about it. But it's not that it's positive. He calls him the... Or you divide up the fame of the Kurus. Since his father died, Yudhishthira is qualified for the throne. The younger brother should not take the kingdom. Right? So in other words, the elder brother, his son should sit on the throne. But the younger brother, he's there technically just supposed to be as a regent until such time as Yudhishthir is ready to take up the throne. Because Yudhishthir was made the crown prince. So it'd be natural then once he's trained, then he would take up the position. But Dhritarashtra was hoping that his son somehow or another would become the king. And that's where the problem comes up. Because he's blind, because of his attachment, all these things, then he's actually the cause of all this difficulty, yes.
But technically, Dhritarashtra being the elder brother, even though he was blind...
But he's blind, so therefore he can't sit on the throne. Oh, okay.
So then Pandu, that's why he's the king.
Yes, but then it's whoever's the king, his son will be the next king.
Why not Dhritarashtra? He is elder, even though he is blind, okay, but he has sons. Who are technically would be senior to that.
But whose son was born first?
Yudhishthira.
So he's the senior son. Yeah. Duryodhana had been born first, then there might be consideration of that. But Yudhishthira was born first.
And if Duryodhana was born first, for example, then there would be a consideration?
It might be a consideration, but generally it would be whoever's the reigning king, it would go down through him. That's just how... Yudhishthira would be the king. The others are kshatriyas, but they wouldn't be kings. So being a kshatriya doesn't necessarily mean you're a king. Like that. You know, it's like the modern thing is you have nobility and you have aristocracy. So then, let's say your father's nobility, so then the eldest son, he would be nobility. All the other sons will be aristocracy. So they're all connected. But they themselves aren't in line for the throne. So then that eldest son, then he would be. Now if he doesn't have a son, and there's no one, then you'd start looking at the others. Is that so? Because the idea is the continuity, is the training, the kingdom. But the problem is Dhritarashtra, he's not the one to train his son. You know, so, yeah. Akura continued, by religiously protecting the earth, delighting your subjects with your noble character, and treating all your relatives equally, you will surely achieve success and glory. You know, so he's saying, you know, what is the proper way of doing. If you act otherwise, however, people will condemn you in this world, and in the next life you will enter the darkness of hell. Remain equally disposed, therefore, towards Pandu's sons and your own. So he makes his the point, that's a general point, and then he makes it pointed that, you have to take care of Pandu's sons. Right? So protecting the earth, taking care, delighting the subjects with his character, and treating all his relatives and that equally. Yes.
In terms of training, Maharaj, we see that both Pandavas and Kurus, they were trained by the same people in an exact same situation.
Yes.
However, the inherent nature was very different.
Yes.
So the question is, can we actually change it? Because we see in this scenario, it didn't change at all.
Devotional association can improve something. Otherwise, generally speaking, what you're born with, that's how you're going to be. You can't actually change it. Like that. But by devotional service, you can improve the character. It doesn't mean you'll change your varna, but you can change the character by which you perform your duties. Does that make sense? Like they say, someone by nature, in this case, is a administrator, like that. Now, on the material platform, there's nothing you can really do to change that. You can try to train, try to adjust, but unless the person kind of takes it, it's not going to happen. It doesn't have that power. But if someone's interested, then very gradually they can improve it. Right? So if they have the samskaras, you may see it go quickly. If you don't have the samskaras, you'll see it go slowly. If you have a really bad samskaras, they won't have an interest at all. So that's the thing, is the modes of nature, things just kind of go in their natural course. But in devotional service, even somebody from a bad background, can take up and develop all the qualities of the demigods because of devotional service. But it doesn't mean that he will not be an administrator by nature. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, because it's not that you take up devotional service, you become taller or something, you know. Yes, it's a phenomenon. We've noticed that the Hare Krishnas, all when they join, then they all, you know, they all become, you know, 6 foot tall, blonde haired, blue eyes, you know, perfectly, you know, fit like that. Nobody gets fat, you know, no, you know, inherent bad DNA genes and all this and that, and everything works, right? No, it doesn't happen, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? They're from New York. They stay New York like that. Yeah.
There's a very popular theory nowadays is that you don't have to be born a leader. Anybody can become an authentic leader.
Yeah. Because if that's possible, how many people will buy the book?
Many.
And if it's saying it was actually, unless you're born with leadership ability, it's not happening. So if it's not happening for you now and you're reading this book, it's not going to happen for you. How many people will buy that book? Right. So therefore, because people want to make money, they want to be recognized, they want to be an authority, they want to be nowadays being the friend of everybody, the Suridam Sarva Dutanam, right? The fraternity aspect. Because liberty and you know, like that didn't work so good. So now, you know, so now they're trying with the equity and the fraternity, you know? Does that make sense? So then it makes it popular. They'll say that. But the point is yes, everybody can be a leader in devotional service. By being inspired in devotional service, committed devotional service, you can be a leader and inspire others in devotional service. So in that way you can be. But if you're saying anyone can be a manager who can lead and do this and that, then how is that possible? Because learning the knowledge, learning the skills doesn't make for a leader. Right? Otherwise, how many businessmen would be coming out of the Harvard School of Business Management? Right? Every graduate would be a businessman. But I can guarantee you, unless they went in a businessman, not one has come out as a businessman. Not one. And if they can't do it, we're not going to do it. So the whole point is this. Whatever's your inherent nature, that's what's there. Now you can cultivate that nature. If you have training, then so much quicker you'll realize your potential. And if you don't have training, you'll work it out yourself according to your karma. Does that make sense? You know, so like that. So it's not, you can't change that. But if it's covered, you can purify it. Right? The guy's a junkie, so there's going to be a lot of ignorance. Then he comes in contact with the devotees. And so then with time he's going to act, you know, basically kind of like a Shudra. And then with time he starts to get purified, a touch of passion will come in, you know, and then he'll be kind of active in this and that and be, you know, maybe good on, you know, whatever it is that he does like that. And then slowly as he keeps going, then it'll come up, that touch of goodness will come, the ignorance will start going away, and then he'll settle in as an administrator. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, you're purifying so that the nature that's covered can be, revealed. But the most important thing is uncovering the actual inherent nature of the soul as devotee of Krishna. And in that way, then one can preach. That's why Lord Chaitanya says everybody should preach. Right? Whoever you see, whoever you meet, preach about Krishna. Because everybody, devotee, can do that. Now, whether they'll be a scholar, or that's another thing. Because as we saw, as we mentioned, Tapan Misra, not a scholar. But he could discuss devotional service and be inspiring to others, but he's not a scholar. Right? You know, and even though Rupa Goswami is the head of the line, Jiva Goswami is known as the greatest scholar in the contemporary age. So basically that means anything that anybody knows historically. You know, so except for like, you know, Brihaspati and Narad Muni and those guys, then he's bigger scholar than anything that has been seen on the planet up to date. You know? Is that, you know, because the Vedic contemporary is not meaning today. So that has to be clear, is what does change, what doesn't change. You know, that's the whole idea. And then if that's clear, is that, in other words, because the point is in training, why have an MBA course? It will never, ever, ever train a businessman. Person's already a businessman, yeah, it just makes it, you know, brings him up to date on what's going on now. If he was out in the village, then he would have no problem. He'd need no training, he can just do it. Whatever he learns from his, you know, father and relatives, that's enough. But the modern, you know, world, the technology and all these different things like that, marketing and all these, then it gives some nice stuff. So, you know, in that year and a half, you'll figure it out. Otherwise, it'd probably take you 5 years to figure it out. So, you know, in 3.5 years, you can make money. Right? So then they may go. But the point is it will never create businessmen. But what does it create? People who can assist a businessman. So people can go to this leadership course and they can learn to be assistants to a leader. But unless they have an inherent nature of a leader in the way that they're talking nowadays, meaning management and those kind of administration, then they can only be an assistant to. They'll never be a leader. Devotionally, yes. Materially, forget it. It's not possible. You know what I'm saying? By having a class, will a grater ever turn into a frying pan? Never. Doesn't matter how much you preach. You can say, no, but these are people. But what's that people that you're talking about? It's all dead matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego are all dead matter. So what's the difference between that and the frying pan? Right? Except that this one moves about and that one doesn't. So you're not going to change the dead matter. You can change the consciousness of the soul. And therefore, the advantage you can take of what you have, the ability to use it to be able to be Krishna conscious, to inspire others in Krishna consciousness, that you can change. So that's the idea of the Daivavarnashram system. Because now, what will that do? So that's the upside is, oh, anybody can become a leader, and they mean a manager. Right? Or someone who can organize on a big scale or this or that. Because anybody who was a leader who was not a manager, generally they get taken out of their positions. Right? You ever seen that temple president? Fabulous temple president. Everyone loves him. Everyone's inspired in that. But he's not a good administrator, so then the temple goes into debt. Who do they send in? Some guy who knows money. He can collect money in that. And then he collects the money, pays the debt, but everybody in the temple gets fried out. Right? So why didn't they keep that guy as the president, as the actual leader, and the other guy just comes in to deal with that, and they just instruct him, you better listen to him when it comes to money. In other words, all the monetary stuff he deals with, but dealing with the devotees, inspiring devotees, that you do. It doesn't happen. Because the concept of being a leader and not a manager, it doesn't exist in the modern context, at least what we're using. So that's the difficulty. They take it naturally means you're a manager. And they have another illusion is they think a manager means administrator. And administrator means leader. So they're going backwards. And then anybody can do it. Then if that's there, then why does Krishna says everybody acts according to their nature? Then it would be a fluid system. It would just be whatever you like, just plug into. But now what's the other side of this, because we're seeing this, but what's the real point? The real point is equity. Because everybody's equal. Because we don't want to accept that we're a Shudra. Does that make sense? No one wants to be a Shudra. The reason that we can't discuss Varnashram, it's not official, is because no one wants to be a Shudra, because they think that that's a low-class thing, even though Shudra in the Vedic sense is probably light years above anything that they were previous to coming to Krishna consciousness. Like that. So that's the difficulty. No one wants to be the Shudra, because we're thinking that's bad. And we can't be Brahmins, you know, the Kshatriyas with money, but we want to be the authority and all knowledge and all that. We want to have the actual control and we want to have all the money. So what's that new Varna? Because Shudras are out. So what's left, then we make that into a leader. You know what I'm saying? And so if you try to define what's what and who can do what, then no, you know, now you're discriminating and all this and that. Why, you can't tell the difference between an apple and a lug nut or something like that? You know, you don't discriminate, you know, like that. So it's like, hey, you know. So that's the difficulty, is that it's actually, it has underlying things that are not actually proper. You know, anyone can be, but no. You can learn how to be supportive of someone if you have the nature. So you either have to be a leader or someone who can follow, you know, support a leader. Or if nothing, at least one who can follow a leader. So that way everybody could fit in. And if you don't fit into any of those categories, then you have to, you know, function independently. So
the difficulty we've noticed is that those who are not leaders going to those courses, somehow they convinced that they are
a leader.
And then they don't want to fall into the second and the third category. They can't fall because I'm a leader. I went through the course, you know, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Like that, the ego is inflated.
Right.
And then they can't fall, they can't function, and they really push. And
they can't follow, they can't lead, and they can't get out of the way, because those are their options, right?
Yeah.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way, and they'll do none of them.
So for 15, 20 years, they try to establish themselves in that position, which is not working, everybody's upset, including themselves. And it's just, it's very confusing.
It's confusing because we're not using our own approach. We're using modern approaches. So modern approaches are all about developing that attitude and identity. Because if you go to one of those seminars and you don't come out feeling like $1 million, are you going to be happy that you just spent, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 on the seminar? No. So they you won't be able to do anything that they said, but at least you feel like you can. And that for you, the identity is an important aspect. But the problem is because it's purely academic, then the people who run those things, at least the original top guys, they know that that's all it is. The guys that come after that, you know, that have gone to, you know, the, what do you call it, the, you know, the institutes that teach that particular kind of management, you know, like that, they really think that they're the cat's meow. But the guys that are on the top know that it's not. Like I mentioned, one guy was a Covey Institute. He was a teacher within the Covey Institute. He ran the seminars, everything like this. And so he really thought he knew what he was doing. And he was the temple president. But he annoyed the devotees so much that they actually had him removed. You know, and because of the prestigious thing, he was so upset, he moved to the opposite side of the planet. And then what did he do over there? Then, because he was part of the institute, now he would train the trainers, you know, that would go out and do the programs. Like that. So what to do? You know? So when we use these modern techniques, that's what's not noticed, is we take on their attitude. We take on, they go into the academics, they take on the academic. They go into the successful, they take on that so-called professional kind of mood. And these are all opposed to devotional service, because devotional service is about humility and about self-realization. So self means I know what kind of body I have, what it can do. I know my mind. I know my intelligence. And I know how this soul, I'm servant of Krishna. So of that, the soul, servant of Krishna, is there. And so I'm going to serve Krishna by body, mind, and word. So what do I have? Therefore, I fit it in. But because of the modern thing that it's all about prestige and this and that, you have to be a leader, you have to be on top. Is anyone teaching, running courses, how to be a good Shudra? Or how to be a good businessman? Or, you know? No. Like that, because it's considered, oh yeah, on this top thing. Because it's about prestige. And that's the weakness. That's why it's a trouble. Otherwise, you just know how you fit in. Like I told you, that one devotee I know of, that he was doing, you know, his service and all that. He was driving and he was driving, and basically whatever needed to be done got done. But he was so responsible. You know, in the whole program, except for the leader of the program and one, two others, the manager of the program, he was the most responsible person out of hundreds and hundreds of people. You wanted something done, you went to him. And he would very clearly, if it came up about Varanashram, he'd said, I'm a Shudra. And so he did everything, but he was the best driver. You know, he could get anything done, anything you wanted done. You know, that was, you know, be Shudra. He would do it. And he was very cultured, very sophisticated, very gentle. He was probably the nicest gentleman on the tour. Right? Like that. So that's the whole thing is Shudras are human. So this modern thing where people project themselves as something they're not, that's not human. Even animals do better than that, right? The dog acts like a dog. They don't act like something else. You know? I mean, he thinks he's something bigger, you know, and it's a problem, right? When the dog's bark. So that's why in the Bhagavatam it refers to them, I think in the first canto, as the village lion. Right? Because it's his, you know, place and he's keeping everyone out. And so, you know, for some degree it's there, but that aspect is annoying. Or donkeys, they actually think they're poets. When they bray, they, in their mind, they're singing sweet poetry. They can't understand why people are throwing things at them and, you know, hitting them and yelling and screaming because it's like, hey, what do you mean? And it's just, you know. So that's the whole thing, is that if you're doing something you're not supposed to, then it's annoying. And if they just accept where they fit in, then they could do so much more. They would be respected and be doing so much responsible work, but not as the leader, as someone assisting the leader. So when you take the modern padati, then you get the whole attitude, because Prabhupada says the first thing in studying Gita is the attitude. And so we make it clear. The karmis don't. They don't even actually understand it. They just know that if you puff the guy up, he feels good. And so he feels it was worth his money. He'll tell his friends. They'll go to the next course. Well, if afterwards they come out and then they try to do it and you haven't puffed up their ego, they can actually see they can't do it. And so then they'll think, well, I didn't learn anything. So they won't tell their friends. You know, they won't write that comment. Yeah, best seminar I've been to. You know, I've been to this, that, and this one was, you know. Yeah. So you have to understand, it's all about money. It's all about that stuff. In other words, people are smart enough to know if you can puff people up, then it makes money. You know? So it makes money. It makes good money, and it makes good pastry. But other than that, then not very useful. Right? Everyone likes, like I remember in the temple, they said the only thing that would be puffed up are the puris. You know, that was kind of the slogan. You know? So, yeah.
In one of the courses, the question was asked like this. Bhagavad Gita, so they ask you can write how Varnashrama is useful in Krishna consciousness, and also same question, how Krishna consciousness is transcendental to Varnashrama. So, and write it from second chapter and third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, or first three chapters of Bhagavad Gita. So the student was writing like how Varnashrama is useful, then Prabhupada that one chapter, third chapter he writes, that when one becomes transcendental, he can be working beyond the means he can act from any varna. So generally what happens is when the questions are asked like this, two questions that together and not explained about varnashrama properly. So they have always the notion that we are devotee, we can do anything.
Means technically you could. Means if you come to the liberated platform, yes, then you can function any way you want. But we generally see as the devotees, if it's not emergency, then they act in their position. Like that. Now, as understanding Krishna consciousness, training in Krishna consciousness, in other words, the brahminical position, then because that's the nature, Vaishnav means, you know, the perfection of the brahminical position. So that means any Vaishnav technically can do the brahminical activities. like that, you know, on at least on our generic level, on that simple level. Technical, this and that, that's another thing, but generic, everybody can do. But ultimately, it comes down to it's emergency, you know, because we're transcendental. Because the point is it's about Krishna. So then someone can do things and all that. So it's not that we're identifying with these varnas. That's the point, is they want to identify that I am a leader, I am a manager. But that's not our process. Daivavarnashram means we perform the duties of administration or management, but we don't identify with it. That's just what we can do. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you're cooking for a program. You know, you can cook puris, so do you have to be, I'm the puri cooker, you know? You know, I can cook puris. You walk around like that, and so everyone stands out, ooh, here comes the puri cooker. You know, like that. You know, is that important? No, you're a cook. And whatever needs to be done that you can do, that's what you do. So Daivavarnashram means you situate yourself however it is in services that you can do, but there's no identity. That's why the devotees are called Ekavarna. Because they're transcendental. They just are absorbed in Krishna. That's the transcendental position. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore, if need be, one can do anything. That's why you see then you have those from, you know, not so ideal backgrounds taking up brahminical services and activities. But the idea is that that goes on until there are those who have that natural qualification in a devotional attitude. Like in India, there's plenty of Brahmins. But how many of them are devotional? You know what I'm saying? And even if they became devotees, generally they went to IIT first. Right? So they didn't come from being an Archika and Sri Rangam and then join the society. No, it's the son who didn't become the Archika. He went to Bombay, went to IIT. Then he comes to contact the devotees. Now he's doing. You know what I'm saying? So the point is when it comes with generations and there's those who do that, then they can do those things. Then the others can just concentrate on being devotees. Does that make sense? So it's a fluid aspect because you have to engage something. What are you going to engage? So whatever you have the nature for and whatever there's the facility for. You know what I'm saying? You're not a manager, but there's no one to manage, and you're the most responsible of Krishna conscious, then you manage the temple until such time as there is someone who can manage. So we'll do anything for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So like that, that's the...
Madhva's one king was there.
Madhva?
And one king was there, then, and there was no king. He came and ruled. By the time that king came.
Oh, Madhvacharya?
In his line. One of the Acharya in his line.
Oh, he ruled the kingdom until the next king was ready.
Ready.
Okay, yeah, these things like that.
Well, basically an Acharya.
But it means you do what's the needful. But otherwise, why would you do something that's not your nature if there's no need? There's someone to do, why would you do? Because the point is leaders are there. How many leaders does it take? You know, it's just like this. It's just, you know, it says, how you say? You know, if we put it in the context of how you say. In America, this kind of joke would be referred to as a Polish joke. Right? But in every other places in Poland, it's probably a Ukrainian joke or a German, you know, like this. So it's how many poles does it take to put in a light bulb? Any idea? I think it takes 5. 1 to hold the light bulb, 4 to turn the ladder. You know what I'm saying? So when you had this whole room of people who then claim to be leaders who are not, it takes a whole room full of them to have a discussion. But in actuality, one leader could do what all of them are doing. That's all it takes. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. It doesn't require so much. But in the modern, then yes, if everybody can be a leader, then who's going to be the follower? Because one time I was discussing, I had already always taken it that, you know, the Eton, Harrow, that whole, you know, Oxford, you know, came with that whole line of preppy schools, then the whole purpose was to create leaders for the, you know, British Empire. And I was talking to someone who actually went to those schools. He says, no, not just leaders, because not everybody's a leader. He says they train the leaders and the followers. Because the follower has to have the same knowledge as the leader, otherwise how do they assist? But that's not being recognized, because no one wants to be the follower. Because it's all about prestige. But we're Rupanugas, we're into following. We don't have a problem with that. Because then you accept authority and all this. So this comes actually from the basis of we don't accept authority. So I only trust myself as an authority, my own mind. So I don't accept authority, and I don't accept Shastra, I don't accept. But if I agree with it, then it's okay. So those parts I agree with are okay, and those parts I don't are not okay. So then the difficulty comes up is that then when we apply that, then you have all these leaders, and like Prabhu was saying, he thinks he's the leader. But then now how does it work? Because he's not. So if he had been for the last 15 years following the leader, then he could do so much. But because he's trying to be the leader, he's just annoying everybody and himself. And now, we're having courses, there'll be more and more of these people. So that's one solution, is if you have somebody who thinks they're the leader because they went to one of these courses, send another 5 people to that same course to come back. Now you have 6 of them, and now it'll, yeah, you know, then it could have some fun. So the whole thing is yes, transcendental, but you have to know how we're transcendentalists, because we don't identify with it. So this thing is that, oh, we're not, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras, but I'm a leader. Then what's the difference? It's the same upadhi, just it's not scientific. Because if I say leader, what does that mean? Right? Brahmins lead in knowledge, Kshatriyas in administration, Vaishyas in knowledge. And then even amongst the Shudras, you have those who lead, right? You know, the guy who runs the spin class, you know, he's a leader. Right? Others can't do that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the point is they do. You're building a house, and so they had carpenter. He's a leader, but he can only lead carpenters. He can't lead the country or make money or... You know what I'm saying? So it's so ambiguous, and because of that, then it can be, yes, everybody can be a leader. But you know, it's the new thing now, and after how long until that will be seen that it doesn't work? Trust people come out now, they'll try, and after a few years, it'll be seen it doesn't work. So I'll have to try another angle.
Devotees, they practice over a period of time. The leader
devotees practice over a period of time.
So the leader, you know, the temple usually, you know, pushes the devotees that they should be managers over a period of time, compulsorily. So that
compulsory, they should be managers.
Yeah, but there are some of them that do not want to go into management, but that is then forced upon them. You know? So how much has it been recommended?
How much is it recommended to get someone who's not a manager into management to do management? It's not recommended at all. It's simple. Prabhupada said that you should be Krishna conscious, know the standards of Krishna consciousness, and be able to identify and engage people according to their conditioned nature. So if they're not a manager, and you're saying that because it's being taken that it's the manager is the leader of Krishna consciousness. When it's not, someone who's more devotional is a leader of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter what his background is. You know what I'm saying? You know, Vidura, how much does Vidura feature in Srimad Bhagavatam? Right? He's in so many cantos. But technically, he's a Shudra. But when it comes to the devotional and understanding the philosophy, he's a leader. When it comes to an understanding of what's the proper thing to do, devote, you know, like this, he's the leader. But he's not a manager. right? Unless he knows the art of management, and as a man, as a Shudra, he can assist. But that's the thing, is that the administrator knows management, but he has Shudras who know management. Right? Those are all the guys who come out of the MBA course. And so then you engage them. But if that's not your background, then, you know. So why is it we think the manager is the highest? The preacher is the highest. If that's understood, things go nicely. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedic system, you see, let's say you have a temple or something, you have the spiritual leader, and then you have the manager. The manager takes care of the administration, and the spiritual leader sees to that standard. And so that works. But in the West, you don't have that concept. And since people are, you know, buying the Western model as the thing that really works when it doesn't really work, it means, yes, you want to do business in the West, it may work. But people from India go to the West and use Indian talent of business and do better. So it's not that. And then why would you use that to run a temple? Right? What professional in the West has ever run a temple? Right? I know Warren Buffett has not. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
When as a leader, when devotee is inspiring devotees, but naturally for the management it requires, if you are also in the management, then management can be done properly. And immediately when it comes for management and handling the
But that's if you have management abilities.
Yeah.
If you don't, why engage them that way? They can engage in something else. See, the point is it's not just management gets everything done. It's taken that if management and money, that's all you need. Everything else works. No, it's Krishna consciousness that makes everything work. So if you're Krishna conscious, then people who know those things will come forward. You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, there's tons of people like that. You don't have to, it's like I think in Chopati, all the administration is done by the community. It's not done by anyone who lives in the temple. Right? But all the puja, all the preaching, all those kind of things, leading the community, that's all done by the temple.
Actually, especially there are senior brahmacharis who are totally brahmanical.
Yeah, they don't do, because it's not necessary. But you have to have managers in that, and on that level they're the top. But it doesn't mean that you don't have others that may be more spiritually advanced. That's why it says the kings, then they were following the Brahmins. That was the whole point.
There is a temple, like, you don't have that type of, then you have to, like,
no, it's just a matter of whatever works. Whoever you have, that's who you engage. But we're discussing the principle, that it's not that everybody has to go into management. That's mandatory. It's like, since when? So then why not everybody has to go into puja? You know, Ambarish Maharaj became perfect, you know, like that. So why aren't they doing puja? You know, why is it that mandatory? You know, we have a temple, so since the deities are the main thing, so therefore then it should be the worship of the deity is more important than managing. Because how many managers do you need in the temple? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the point. You know, I mean, maybe in the West you have the temple president, he's president, and there's 5 devotees there, or 10 devotees, or 15 and that. But like here in Mayapur, it's 200 devotees, 250 devotees, there's one temple president, he runs the whole thing. And they have more departments here than they have. You take the whole zone, any zone in the West, the whole zone, all the temples, everything they have, all the manpower, everything, that won't match one here. You know what I'm saying? That there's like 80 departments here. You know what I'm saying? So one president ran it efficiently because he was an administrator. So that's the whole thing, is they put more and more people into management because there's more and more people who aren't managers. And when you do that, people who are actually managers won't step forward. A manager does not want to be involved in a bureaucracy. Why get involved? He'll just come and do some, you know, some preaching, some service, you know, sweep the floor, serve prasad. He's cool. right? But the guys who are the so-called managers, they won't do any of that because they're too big to do that. Instead of serving prasad or that, they could be doing more important things like, you know, email. You know what I'm saying? So it's not good. So we see is here, Dhritarashtra is not supposed to be in the position he is. He is doing it. That's what creates the problem. So people who are in positions they shouldn't be in, that creates problem. Right? We're not talking about someone's in the position they should be in and there's problems come up. You're in the material world. That happens. Mistakes are made. But the point is are they effective in that area? Is it their nature? They're comfortable there. People are comfortable with them. Then if there's a mistake, then you deal with that. Right? But the idea is, one guy, he has too much power, so he'll, make it down to a temple committee who will do absolutely nothing. And since the committee's been there, the temple has more deities than devotees. You know what I'm saying? The committee is bigger than how many are temple devotees. Right? So then what's the point? How is that better? Simply because of the equity and fraternity. So, we're good. We have ranted enough. Okay. Remain equally disposed, therefore, towards Pandu's sons and your own. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Akura hinted that if Dhritarashtra did not treat the Pandavas and his sons as equals, surely there would be a fight between the two camps of cousins. Since the cause of the Pandavas was just, they would come out victorious, and the sons of Dhritarashtra would be killed. This was a prophecy told by Akura to Dhritarashtra. Because of his attachment, it was wrong. Then, the point is pushing that agenda, then it ended up that all of Dhritarashtra's sons, down to the last one, was killed. Well, if they just let that Yudhishthira run the kingdom, they would have all been nicely situated, like that, and they would have all been alive. But it wasn't to be, so. Akura continued, in this world, no one has any permanent relationship with anyone else, O king. We cannot stay forever, even with our own body. What to speak of our wife, children, and the rest? Every creature is born alone and dies alone. And alone one experiences the just rewards of his good and evil deeds. Right? You can't share them. They you get them. People can be kind and try to help, but they come to you. Does that make sense? Yeah. And alone one experiences the just rewards of his good and evil deeds. In the guise of dear dependents, strangers steal the sinfully acquired wealth of a foolish man, just as the offspring of a fish drink up the water that sustains the fish. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Dhritarashtra's affection was also unlawful and did not show much intelligence. In plain words, Akura hinted to Dhritarashtra that his staunch family affection was due to his gross ignorance of fact. It was due to his gross ignorance or his blindness to moral principles. Or gross ignorance of the facts? Okay. Although we appear combined together in a family, society, or nation, each of us has individual destiny. Everyone takes birth according to individual past work. Therefore, everyone must individually enjoy or suffer the results of his own karma. There is no possibility of improving one's destiny by cooperative living. Sometimes it happens that one's father accumulates wealth by illegal ways, and the son takes away the money, although it was earned with great difficulty by the father, just as a small fish in the ocean eats the material body of a large old fish. One ultimately cannot accumulate wealth illegally for the gratification of his family, society, community, or nation. An illustration of this principle is that many great empires, which developed in the past, are no longer existing because their wealth was squandered away by later descendants. One who does not know this subtle law of fruit of activities, and who thus gives up the moral and ethical principles, carries with him only the reactions of his sinful activities. His ill-gotten wealth and possessions are taken by someone else, and he goes to the darkest region of hellish life. One should not, therefore, accumulate more wealth than allotted to him by destiny. Otherwise, he will be factually blind to his own interest. Instead of fulfilling his self-interest, he will act in just the opposite way for his own downfall. There's no possibility of improving one's destiny by cooperative living. Right? It's only by Krishna consciousness that you can improve the quality of life. It means whatever your karma is, that's what you're going to get. In Krishna consciousness, that can improve. So only when you cooperate together in Krishna consciousness, then we see that things work nicely. Otherwise, Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, his brothers, Shakuni, they're all cooperating together, but it doesn't improve one's destiny. They all get destroyed, every last one of them. Right? Isn't it? Duryodhana, his 100 brothers, Shakuni, and Karna. They all get killed. Yes?
You know, there's a group karma and an individual karma.
Yes.
So how that works?
The group karma means when the group together agrees on and makes an endeavor in a particular activity that gives a reaction. So then, in that way, they'll share.
Like a nation.
Yes. Right. Yes. But it doesn't mean that the people who inflict the results of that reaction are in the right. You know. Hence, you go looking for them and Argentina or, you know, someplace, right? But the point is that it comes as a group, so then those things are there. So if people go against, it's just, but at the same time, as an individual's karma is so bad, it can also affect the group.
It overlaps.
You know, so that's why you have to choose who you associate with. You know, oh, whoa. Yeah. So that's why we focus more on the Krishna consciousness, because it's so complex, the cycle of samsara, that we simply, according to our nature, perform our duties to please Krishna, and our whole point is to go back to Godhead. Whether we're materially successful or not, that actually doesn't matter. If we remember Krishna at the time of death, go back to Godhead, that's the actual point. So we should be focusing on that. Otherwise, we may focus on what will be good for us in the future, but the point is in that future, even we have those facilities, are we going to be Krishna conscious? If not, then that means, then what about the next life? Have we prepared for that? No one's doing that. Because the only thing to prepare for that is Krishna consciousness, or performing one's duties appropriately. So if we're not Krishna conscious and we're not following the Vedic recommendations, then what are we preparing for? Right? Hey, how you say? An enjoyable ride in a bucket. Yeah? No? Yes. Instead of fulfilling his self-interest, he will act in just the opposite way for his own downfall. Akura continued, a fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, and children, and other relatives, for he thinks, these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. Footnote 40. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, in order to maintain his life, he does not follow the rules and prohibitions. Therefore, he is a fool, right? So that's what we're defining. We're not saying the guy's an idiot in the way of he didn't do very well academically. We're talking about if he doesn't, in order to maintain himself, he doesn't follow the rules and prohibitions, right? What he should do, what he shouldn't do. If he doesn't do that, that's a fool. So you can have someone with great material knowledge and material success. They're still a fool if they're not following what's recommended. And even if they're following all the Vedic recommendations, the real recommendation is being Krishna conscious. So then on that level, it may be materially not so foolish, but in the long run they are, because the material world always ends in misery. So the only solution, actually, to be successful materially, the only solution is spiritual. So the material success is going back to Godhead. Right? Because that's the only thing that actually makes material life successful. Right? Nothing else will. It means we may say they do, and we talk about, and this guy this, and that guy that, but, you know, everyone's going to, things fall apart, everyone's going to be dead. What's not recommended by the scriptures? Like that. That's what he's saying, is that, in other words, you're not doing what should be done in the way of religious processes and ultimately Krishna consciousness. Because this is Bhagavatam, so not really worried about just being a pious person. So if you're Krishna conscious, then that, of the two, that's more important. So if you're not following the religious principles but you're Krishna conscious, that's better than following the religious principles and not being Krishna conscious. But it's not as good as following the religious principles and being Krishna conscious. Right? And if we're not following the religious principles and not Krishna conscious, of course that's the worst. Okay. A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, children, and other relatives, for he thinks these things are mine. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't finish this. Okay. Life, wealth, relatives, as well as friends and servants. Adhyayaha. Reject him. The list is in order to increase importance of non-rejection. Right? So life, you know, you lose your life, then, you know, it doesn't work out so good. Right? Wealth, and that's another. Relatives, another. As well as friends, servants. You know, so it all goes down. Life rejects him when he dies. Though living, wealth leaves him in conscious beings like children. They give him up without regard for Dharma. Right? And servants, just they find a better job, they're gone. That's just the way it works. You know, you wonder why your cleaning lady hasn't come for a week, because she's got another job. She's found somebody else that's, you know, foolish enough to pay them more, and she gets to do less. Right? So hey. Abandoned by his so-called dependents, ignorant of the actual goal of life, indifferent to his real duty, and having failed to fulfill his purposes, the foolish soul enters the blindness of hell, taking his sinful reactions with him. Right? Those are the only things. So you don't have to worry. In case you are in anxiety, don't worry. For the materialist, their sinful reactions will not leave them. They're the only thing that won't reject you. They will go with you wherever you go. Like that. Real friends. Real dependable. Like that. Does that make sense? So not so good. So that's it. The actual goal of life. Right? And his real duty. So his real duty is Krishna consciousness. Engaging his nature in Krishna's service. It's not the engagement of the secondary aspects, that's the real Dharma. It's in connecting it to Krishna. So one should know both. That's why it says one knows the material and spiritual side by side. Therefore, O King, looking upon this world as a dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy, please control your mind with intelligence and become equipoised and peaceful, my Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that except for persons in Krishna consciousness, everyone is always disturbed in mind and full of anxiety. Even those trying for liberation or merging into the Brahman effulgence, or the yogis who try to achieve perfection and mystic power, cannot have peace of mind. Pure devotees of Krishna have no demands to make of Krishna. They are simply satisfied with service to him. Actual peace and mental tranquility can be attained only in perfect Krishna consciousness. So what we're looking for in these material things, we can't actually gain. Only Krishna consciousness can give. That's why then Bhagavatam is pointing that out. Right? And we see that pure devotion, that's the actual platform that fulfills all desires. Right? That makes sense? Dhritarashtra said, O master of charity, I can never be satiated while hearing your auspicious words. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Footnote 41. The BBT purport states, in the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Dhritarashtra was in fact proud and felt he already knew everything Akura was speaking. But to maintain diplomatic gravity, he spoke as a saintly gentleman. So he thought he knows all that. But he doesn't do it. So that's the thing, is this pride, you know, like we started the conversation before. Someone's trained in an area, they're proud of it, they actually can't use it. So that's the whole point, is he's proud that, yes, I know all these things. And so he's doing the right thing, but therefore he can't apply it. And, you know, like that, he liked to study, he liked to hear these things, because he'll apply it in so many ways. So he might apply it with the citizens or others or like that, or amongst his sons. But he won't apply it to the Pandavas. So at that point, that's where it falls apart. Even so, gentle Akura, because of my unsteady heart, is prejudiced by affection for my sons. These pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed there, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden? Right? So he's taking the principles that, hey, it's all destiny and we can't do anything separate. So therefore, my desiring these things is what can I do? So he's not actually taking responsibility for his actions. That's the one thing you'll see constantly with Dhritarashtra. He'll never take responsibility. He'll just say, it's destiny, what can I do? We just all follow our destiny. And yes, for a materialist, that's the way it goes. But you know, they just step out of it and try to enjoy like that. So it's not that they just, okay, I'm just doing what I should do. But they try to enjoy what they do. Yes?
Many people use this.
Yes.
In their, you know, argumentation of how things are not working.
Yes.
Isn't it the feminine position actually to put everything on the surcharge, like, it's nothing to do with me, it's like...
It's a position of attachment. You know, I'm in control. It's just the material consciousness that you put it on that. So that will be, yes, that'll be the weakness of the feminine nature. Because there's certain things, is that there's going to be the feminine nature, meaning the masculine feminine. And that, you know, whichever role we're taking. So if we're acting in the proper way, we take that responsibility. If we're not, we don't. But then you have the overall inherent that as a soul, we're feminine. So then these things are going to come out. Because Krishna should take care. But what we're forgetting is we're not surrendering to Krishna. We're not acting in that capacity. So he's in control. But the point is we're acting against that control. So it's not that we're actually acting in a pious way. So we're neither following the rules he's doing, or we're just following, you know, how things unfold. I'm not really taking responsibility, but whatever comes up, I deal with that according to the rules. So I'm not doing that. You know, it's just like the kids. They don't make the plans and that. It's just they're told to get in the car and in the back seat. They do it. So they go along with it. Or it's that they try to perform their duties within it. But, you know what I'm saying? So in either case, it comes out. So in his case, yes, it's attachment. It's that, you know, it's improper. Because the other thing is why, you know, he wouldn't be proper is, could he go to Gurukul? Could he do all the duties? So he wouldn't get that full training. And so he wouldn't have the character actually required to be the king. You know, as Pandu was being nice and engaging him and stuff like that. But actually, technically, he didn't have to. But it was just because he's his brother, he tries to take care. But then now Dhritarashtra takes advantage. But yes, because the point is we've done this, then that's there. So the soul can understand that by spiritual intelligence. They can understand that, yes, you know, we have to do these things, we have to surrender to Krishna, and then we make our endeavor, then how the result comes, that's up to Krishna. Then we continue our endeavor based on the new situation created that's from our previous endeavor. Does that make sense? So we can have knowledge, we can apply that knowledge, we can make the endeavor for a result, but the result is not up to us. Right? Because being the instrumental cause, we're only the instrument. We can't say, you know what I'm saying? The spoon can't say how the subject is going to turn out. It can only help. You know what I'm saying? So we perform our duties, and then the overall thing, how that comes, how it turns out, that's up to Krishna. So as the situation, as it transforms, we then adjust to that and perform our duties, you know, within whatever that is. That's how we can be an instrument. So then we're always busy in all that. And so we're thinking if it goes the way we want, that will be good. But the thing is, we don't know everything, so it may not be good. Does that make sense?
So the difficulty happens in the area of attachment, because we can actually function on the level of Dharma as long as we don't go into those areas. When we come closer to those areas, then everything is...
It starts to fall apart. That's the whole point in the Gita of the Karma Yoga, is that the areas of our attachment... Then we have to see what's the recommended ways of dealing with them, and then how that's offered to Krishna. So that way we get to experience our attachments, but at the same time as it's progressive and we move forward. Though, then there'll be some regulation in that we may or may not appreciate. That's the thing, is because we're thinking, no, if we do it my way, I'll enjoy so much more. But if that's the case, then all those outside the Vedic culture would be so happy. Their personal life, their family life, everything would be going so wonderfully. But it's not. So the thing is that we, as a servant, want to take part in whatever we can do according to our nature. So we have attachments. And so then those, according to Krishna's direction, are engaged in, because he is those attachments. And he's the goal of those attachments. He's everything about that. So if we deal with that according to how it should be, then it works that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we can do. Because if we don't follow, it's not going to get any better. So we're saying, well, if I follow that, it won't be so good, it'll be boring, but most people's life are boring anyway, so might as well follow and at least get the benefit of following. And then with time, as you get purified, it won't be boring. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Dhritarashtra hinted to Akura that he had complete faith in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, he was very partial to his family members. In the near future, Krishna would vanquish all the members of his family, and in a helpless condition, Dhritarashtra would take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. To show his special favor to a devotee, Krishna usually takes away all the objects of his material affection, thus forcing the devotee to be materially helpless, with no alternative but to accept the lotus feet of Krishna. This actually happened to Dhritarashtra after the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Right, so one can either carry on with the attachment, not following in connection to Krishna, though going on and doing one's service to Krishna, but it'll all fall apart. Or one can try to engage whatever it is in Krishna's service, and then one gets the benefit of that service. And whether it remains, whether it falls apart, that's up to Krishna. Because the point is going back to Godhead, becoming a devotee of Krishna. It's not how perfectly we run all these things. Right? They have a limit in how much satisfaction they can give, and they have a limit in reality on whether it's actually possible or not. So, yes.
There's another fear we have, is that Krishna prematurely will take away our attachments.
Premature for who?
For us. Because we still attach.
But at the same time is, when will that attachment go away? It's just like, let's say the beggar has 20 rupees. Is he attached to that or not?
Yes.
And what about a beggar who only has 5 rupees?
Yes.
What about someone who only has 1 rupee? So, is there a point when we'll give up our attachment? No. So therefore, when it comes to the point where we could give it up, but we may not want to, that's when Krishna takes it away. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. Because otherwise, we will never give it up. So there's a point at which you can... Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is you know what's the point. Krishna knows the point. He's in the heart. He knows. And so that's the point where it'll be focused on. So, in other words, Krishna will never give us a test we can't pass. Whether we pass it or not, that's up to us. But he doesn't give us anything we can't pass. Just like Maya, never gives us anything we can't pass. We may be overwhelmed by Maya, but it's that what she's given to us means we do have the capacity that we could if we applied ourselves. But if we don't, then we won't. And so, since it's a it's sadhana, then much of the time we don't pass. So that's why it's practice. Does that make sense? She'll never give something more than what will distract you.
Basically, we have two scenarios. Krishna is testing us, and then somehow we fail, and then some devotees, they go through the crisis and really go up, like seriously progress, and some just leave. So is that a matter of piety or...
And determination, faith, like that. Because the point is that you can see is that pure devotional service isn't affected by things going nicely or not. You know, because we have so many examples of people who goes nicely, they remain Krishna conscious. It goes not nicely, so it can go nicely and people leave Krishna consciousness. It gets too good, they leave Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? You know, the job goes so good and they get a promotion and they get up there in the big field and then they just keep going and then you'd never see them again in Krishna consciousness. So the whole point is either way, whichever one's going to work. In other words, Maya's going to push whichever one's going to work. If by giving you too much, you'll go away, she'll do that. If by not giving you enough, you'll go away, she'll do that. And she knows exactly how much it is. You know, right down to the paisa, right? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that will always go on. But the point is Krishna consciousness is such that it's more powerful than Maya. So the jiva, technically the jiva in its natural state can't be overwhelmed by Maya. Even though Maya is 1/4 of unlimited, it still can't overpower the jiva. The jiva is more powerful. Because the jiva is a part of internal potency. Sat. Right? Sat, chit, ananda. Well, Maya is not neither sat nor chit nor ananda. You know what I'm saying? So the soul is, like I said, more brilliant than the sun. That's the nature. But they don't necessarily, if they identify with Maya, then they'll get overwhelmed by Maya. Yeah, so it's just a matter of what you want, then it'll arrange. If to increase your devotion, then Krishna may make things work nicely or not to increase the devotion. But if you don't want to increase, you actually are looking for an excuse to go away, then Krishna will give that. You know, as I said before, is that, you know, they lost one of the gurus here, nobody went away. Other zones, they lost their guru, the whole zone went away. You know, it's just, so what was it? They were looking for excuse. Otherwise, you know, in Krishna Bhajanamrita, I think Narahari Chakrabarti, he mentions that at the time of Lord Chaitanya, so many senior devotees and gurus fell down from Krishna consciousness. But the mission still went on. You go by what's nice. You don't go by what's not nice. You know what I'm saying? You go to the person's house to see how nicely they've arranged the house, not to check in his garbage. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It's just what you want. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.